The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Frank Cotolo. He just talks and 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 talks.
Now, I want to talk to you because you're obviously upset.
Permission is granted.
Glad I met you. I'm glad I met you, James.
I was not considering the fact that I, in fact, am the third man, capital T, capital D, capital M. But I am.
I want to show you something.
Let's take off all our clothes.
And maybe that's true. And that's what I said.
That's the way, how we used to sing it. I'm sorry. That's just the way we used to sing it. It's the way you should sing it from now on.
But look at this. What is this?
I hate to put a negative spin on this because it's great to drink and everyone loves to drink.
They say you should not drink alcohol when it's so hot.
And I've talked about this too in the past when I talked about soccer moms.
That was so good.
No, I didn't talk about soccer moms.
Excuse me for saying it. It's not even my place to say it.
I'm talking about soccer moms who became roller derby moms. And don't...
It was the old stuff.
And don't you think I haven't stopped. I have given up on the roller derby thing. Let's just get Pi Kim on the phone.
Wait. Where are the phones?
They took the phones.
Huh? We're not using Skype. Tonight, today, this afternoon.
You're such a hero. You're so rich. How come you're coming down here and waste your time with such a bunch of bums?
But let's not get into that. Let's not talk about me. Even though it is all about me. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about Nancy.
What did I learn as a kid on Western? You don't sell a guy one car.
But I believe that, you know, we could have a lot more fun. I'm not trying to be politically correct here either.
So I don't know, do I?
Let me have your attention for a moment.
Do what you got to do if you're a neo-postmodernist, and I know you are.
What is that?
Look, just go. Jay, the best thing to do is to just Google the gal.
Let's talk about something important.
I really am when it comes to this thing.
Let's talk about something important.
Just a whole nother angle just took place in my head.
Put that coffee down.
Now let's forget about drugs and medicine. Let's talk about sex.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
That's going to be happening. I got some things to cover before we get there. Dirty Things Get Stiff by Frank Cotolo.
It may mean something to you. It may not. I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Does that mean that if
my method
dirty
thing for starting anything is I tell myself the story when I'm laying in bed at night before I go to sleep, I'll tell myself this story. And so at some point, probably 9 months after this, because this is what it's like, you know, a little piece of grit and it makes a pearl after a while. You just have to give it time. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't. But a lot of times it does. But people will say, do you keep a notebook? And the answer is, I think a writer's notebook is the best way in the world to immortalize bad ideas. my idea about a good idea is one that sticks around and sticks around and sticks around. It's like, to me, it's like if you were to put breadcrumbs in a strainer and shake it, which is what the passage of time is for me. It's like shaking a strainer. All this stuff that's not very big and not very important just kind of dissolves and falls out. But the good stuff stays, you know, the big pieces stay. I had the idea for Under the Dome when I was teaching high school back in 1973, and it was just too big for me, and I was too young for it.
Yeah.
And I wrote about 25, 26 pages and put it away.
Yeah.
There's a scene at the beginning of this book where this woodchuck gets cut in half when this dome comes down over his town.
Look, just go. I tell you, the best thing to do is just Google the gal.
In my early 20s, and just sort of recreated it from memory when I wrote the book.
As elegantly as I can, I think that readers sort of expect that.
Let's talk about something important.
And then when the thing is done, particularly an editor. And one of the things
just,
I'm not sometimes about
the best thing
editing,
to do is just Google the gal.
The more
Let's
successful
talk about something
get,
important.
The more important it is to listen to an editor. Who
Let's talk about
hang
something important.
In Times Square. So I try to do that. And
Let's talk about
what
something
Hemingway
important.
Said, "You must kill your darlings." Well, that seems a little bit harsh.
Let's
I'm
talk
not
about
able
something
to kill
important.
All my darlings, but I do some. Next.
Frank Cotolo. He just talks and 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 talks.
Wake up, it's night. Wake up, turn up the mic. Wake up. I'll wake you up with this one. It's Frank Cotolo, man's name, but don't detail it. Wake up, it's night. Time's ticking on. Time. Time. It's time for this. We're gonna do it again here. Craig Leaner is in the wings. We're gonna talk to him later. Writers talk. One of them, the godfather of internet broadcasting, the bard. Here we go. To ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello, and into every bordello. Let me hit that off there. See, you go. Where we go here on the... I don't even think I want to slate this show anymore. Because, you know, we're on when we're on. That's what happens. We're either up in the cloud or we're here. But the good news is autumn. Now it's warm again. I don't get this. It's not me. No. It ain't me, babe. My name is Frank Cotolo, man's name adorns the title of the show, and we're here. I'm putting it on again. I'm sorry. Let me hit it three times. Give me a little air. I think it just has something to do with ventilation. Not always does it have to do with the weather, except when autumn is coming, the weather is coming. Cooler weather is coming. We'll hopefully be here because we're lining up guests left and right. First of all, let me just mention that was Stephen King talking about writing. You know, the last thing I ever want to do again in my life is go listen to someone who talks about how they write. There just comes a certain point. I think you really reach a pinnacle, a major level in your professional life if you write things for a living. You get to that point where it's like, look, this is how I do it. I don't care how they do it. And it never helped me to listen how they do it. The more you listen to others when teaching anything, I think, but it's certainly creative stuff. The more you listen to others, the more you you second guess yourself. And second guessing is not for creative people. And it's not for writers. And it's not for musicians. And it's not for painters. And it's not for me. Anyway, so I thought we'd put that on. To listen to Stephen King talk about, you know, and his opinions. I don't keep a notebook because that's where ideas die. Yeah, well, you know, so all their characters all die in your books too. I don't know. I'm just not, you know, it's not like, I would say that about somebody I really like to read. I'm saying about Stephen King, you know, for instance, the guy, and I forgot his name now, the author who wrote Cider House Rules, who also wrote that World According to Garp. Irving, that's it, John Irving. Jeez, come on, Frank. Oh, it's good, I remembered it. John Irving,
I like his screenplays. I like how he takes his book and makes it into a movie. Unfortunately, at least in the case of Side House Rules, it was beautiful. It was brilliant. But I couldn't read the book. There are just certain people, and they do look the book. They do well, right? And the book sell, and they begin into movies. But I can't do it. So if John Irving was telling me, even though he had, like, you know, he's had all these successful books and I haven't had any successful books, he would say, well, you know, what I do is, and it's like, I know whatever you do. Listening to you is not going to do anything at all, because it's a brand new world out there. Every single day, it's a brand new world. Every single day. Because time just marches on. That's not a very steadfast march, is it? Anyway, my name is Frank Atolo. Man's name adorns the title of the show. That was Stephen King. We will hear no more from him. Someone said to me, you know, there's another... I actually enjoyed the new version of It. I saw it. I saw It. Oh, gosh, a long time ago. I was in college. And my old partner there, Tom Savino, and I would laugh and laugh and laugh. Because there was a product called It. Yes, it was a spray or a goo or something. It was something you use, like, I don't know, like that AB-40 or whatever it was, UB-40. Or that, or is that a ship? That airplane. You know, it was WD-40, that's it. And, you know, it was something like that. It. And, you know, and we would say, you know, we would just find, it was funny because you would say, I'm going to use it. There were too many slogans that could have been attached to it, see? Because you just got, that's the ultimate pronoun. Is it even a pronoun? It could be. It should be. We'll make it one. Speaking of making words things, if no one appears on the show next week, because I'm getting together a bunch of guests starting the fall here with the summer leaving, and hopefully we'll be able to be here every Thursday night live, because, and not go up to the cloud. You know, maybe, I don't know, for whatever. You know, like I said, we don't think about next week. We think about now. And we're trying to put some guests together. Well, actually, we're not putting guests together. They are together. We're trying to get them on the show. We've lost a few, not to death, just to to life, actually, right? That's what happens in life. You lose people. It's like, where has he been? I don't know. I haven't talked to him in 4 months. He's gone. You used to talk to him all the time. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. And then all of a sudden, nobody was in touch with one another. So it happens. But we have a couple of things we're going to do with people. And we're going to get some people on and do some shows so that I won't be yakking constantly about this, that, and the other thing. I know you love it, and that's what made the show. But, you know, it's a long time coming. This is the 20-something the year. Something. That's not a word, but I can just see. Speaking of those, though, I am going to do a show, a solo show on legends. Legends. The word legends, the meaning legends, and the misuse of legends in the English language as it loses its potency to cheap, crappy journalism. That's going to be here on this show. Legends. You've heard me rant about this. It's not actually a rant. It's more, it's not a rant. I don't like to use that term for people, like, you know, here's my opinion. Oh, he's ready to rant. He's got a rant on that. And, you know, I know we're going to have some guests on. Here's who I don't have dates for yet. Echo Marie Tyler, that absolutely gorgeous model, crazy gal out, dancing gal out, the Batcave or whatever the hell that place is there in Los Angeles. Our friend of friends, and now an artist. She's doing things, and I'm helping her by titling her, like, it, you know, I don't know. Well, she sells a billion, who knows. We're going to get, she wants to be on, because she said I have a rant about this, that, and the other thing. And I think it has something to do with L.A., the homeless people, the cleanliness of the city, or city changed, or whatever. So we're going to have her on. We don't have a date for her yet. We have, of course, we're going to have the Artist D, of course. That's coming up. And the Artist D and I are going to talk about the congestion, web congestion, like, yeah, heart congestion. It's dangerous. It could kill. It could kill. Web congestion. Too much traffic. Too many things going on. Too much. Okay? The cup runneth doesn't just runneth over, but the cup runneth over so much that it drowns the cup. I mean, there's a metaphor, or the simile, or the semaphore, or the methyle, or whatever it is together there. We're going to do that this Tuesday. And if you're listening on the reruns, you know, on one of the other stations or somewhere else, or this is out of time, out of mind, out of time, then don't mind this. But I'll give you a specific date, even though it dates the show. But that's okay. You say use it for a time capsule. September 3rd, I'm going to be a Tuesday. Yes. I'm going to be on the Jiggy Jaguar show again. Been a while. Jiggy Jaguar is going to come back too. And rant about something, not rant. See, I said it, I shouldn't have said that. He's gonna talk, cause he doesn't rant. He hardly even explains or expresses things. And anyway, we're gonna have him on again, and him and I will, joust the world of radio, which is a complete mess. But I'm gonna be on his show with, I forgot his name, that guy writes The Man. It's that guy. Sound like, that guy. Yeah, you know, that guy. The Man, I believe it's the same guy, it was one of the guys that was on that election show on, in 2016, the election show. What I mean, the show during, the live show during the election. He, what do you do? He writes about, he writes books, it's either for, children with autism or about, whatever. I don't know. But it's a topic I like, and maybe that's why Jiggy said, you know, Dan, his name is Dan something. He's probably going, yeah, you know who's going to be on with me? That Frank something. Or maybe he's going to go, I don't even know his first name. Who knows, right? Doesn't matter. Not a moment of it matters. So we'll be doing that maybe another week and another week after that. I want to get Ben Knoll on. That's only been like, what, how many years? 7 years since I invited Ben Knoll on. It's not Nolan. That's not his name. It's not Ben Nolan. It's Ben Knoll, K-N-O-L-L. I believe, oh, wait a second, was he on? And he told us about his book, or was he going to be on again? I don't know. He's a comedian and a writer and a fine fellow. I believe a fine fellow. You describe to yourself what is a fine fellow and place it within that definition. My name is Frank Atola, man's name adorns the title of the show here, going down the Hallelujah Trail. Craig Lehner, I'm going to get on the Skype. Oh, yes, and Dusty Nathan, I said, look, you want to be on the show? Get Skype. That's it. Dusty, I'm going to write down. I'm going to make sure he's on that list. Dusty Nathan, and I'm going to try to get Bruce Goldberg, an old friend of mine, to talk about some Hollywood things and meeting and stuff, you know, when he's behind the scenes guy, as I was too. So we're talking, so get these names, huh? Well, you won't remember them anyway. I know you, and it doesn't matter. The Jigs, Bruce Goldberg, the Ben Knoll, the Yardist D, and stuff about legends, which is just going to, you know, I guess it will fall upon deaf ears, legendary deaf ears. Oh, boy, replenish your precious bodily fluids as you list. Craig Lehner has written another book. Craig has been on twice with me, once when... Speaking of Jiggy Jaguar, I think that's how I met him. Once when he wrote his first book, and then once we talked about just writing. He and I, so here's another book out. If you saw it on my Facebook page, or if you saw it on the CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com, Craig and Lehner, these wonderful books for younger people. I don't do that, but that's why. We're in a way, we're a unity of opposites. Both writers, we talk about what we do, and this, that, and the other thing. But, in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, you are welcome for the wonderful radio. It continues. Something else, too, I'm looking for, I haven't heard back from her. Mary Parr is a YouTuber, a new YouTuber, a delightful show that I ran into on Twitter, of all places, and then went over to YouTube and subscribed. I do that now and then. And she has a lot of potential and may, you know, who knows? You don't know. But I've asked her, and hopefully she will Google me, because she probably doesn't know me. A lot of people don't know me. That's a good thing. And I'm trying to get her. on the show. I should censor to said it that way. Mary Parr, known as Red. Oh, Red or Red. She's wonderful red hair. She actually, it reminds me, well, forget about it. Because it might not happen, right? But I'm just telling you some of the things I have planned here. Let's go back to Craig Leaner, who's written a book. And before we go to get Craig Leaner and talk for the rest of this show about his book, books, writing, whatever else comes to mind from that. Maybe talk about, you know, listening to other writers. I don't know why Stephen King turns me off so much. I don't. I'm not, you know, I'm not jealous. I have no, I don't know. Maybe it's because of what he writes. I just don't care to read that stuff. Okay. And it's so long, you know, but what I do like is I read a review of something. I read a review of It. There we go. Not the product. His book called It. There's a new It out. It's a new It out. Yeah. There's an It too. It too. You mean It? Yes. I mean this and It too. It and It too. That's what it would be called. And I liked what the reviewer was saying about the bad reviews that Stephen King received. But this is writer talk, so you'll be more interested in it when two writers are talking. Two writers go into a bar. Yeah, I still do. Isn't it amazing? It's cool and everything. You hear that little stuff in the background? I don't know if you can hear that the way I hear it, because that's just a little fan I have right there. So we're going to get Craig Leaner. But while we're talking about books, go buy my books. Go buy my books. Do you know where to buy them yet? Do I have to tell you? Are you new here? Yours? Amazon.com. I have books there. Digital books there. They're all available digital now, right? Amazon.com. There's some books there. Some are funny. Some are serious. Some are, and some shouldn't even be up there. I know why that gambling book is still up there. That's from a project that a long time ago. And forget it. That doesn't even need to be mentioned. But there are books there, books of fiction and poetry. Lulu.com, where there's a book. And this, you might want to do this. Turk Bahrain. There's a book called The Return of Turk Bahrain. It's a whole bunch of stories about the detective who's always known as somebody else. Always old by now, but yeah, somebody else, right? That's other names, whatever you want to say. And, someone's trying to develop that into a web series. We'll see how far that goes. I think, and then other, all sorts of stuff going on. It's great. You know, a lot of things to make. And then, stuff I can't even tell you about, which is terrific stuff. I'm in a holding period. I'm between books right now, which is always a weird place for me to be. Get that fan. Why the heck? I don't get it. I wonder if it's not even that humid. It's, oh well. In this event, especially all events. See, I said it completely wrong. My name is Frank Cotullo. Mayor's name adorns the title of the show. Things are relatively good, thank you. And you're welcome for the wonderful radio. This is wonderful radio. It's a genre that I created. Actually, I didn't create this genre. It was created for me. It was created by all the other people who changed radio and made it bleh, which is, and it's not wonderful. Is it wonderful to listen to anybody on the radio who just says what you want them to hear and that's that? I don't think so. I think that you know what I'm talking about, what's happened to AM radio. And it's stupid. It's just stupid. We should all have our lives and do our, I'm going to have some water. Maybe that'll help. You know, remember what I said from the very beginning. If you weren't here in the very beginning, I don't mean the very beginning of this show. I mean the very beginning of this show when it started years and years and years ago. Dehydration is the enemy. Replenish your precious bodily fluids. I said if you never learn or are entertained by anything on this show, you will know one thing. Dehydration is the enemy, and you should always replenish your precious bodily fluids. Now we look at this thing called Skype. Oh, God, I hate Skype. Why does it make me call it? Why does it... I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. Other than the fact that when a company buys another website, you know, YouTube is now, if you sign in, it has to do with Google, right? Google just went out and bought stuff. And then what? Microsoft bought stuff. And then all this stuff is going on that is, so then, you know, they update whatever they update. Oh, look at this. Look at all these notes I have. Oh, notes, right. Let me tell you this one more thing. Here's another thing I'm going to do. It's not going to be a guest. It's me. And I'm going to take out, speaking of notebooks, you're not going to listen to this one, Stephen King. Like, you'd listen anyway, right? You know?
I got 700 pages to write. And that's only for chapter one.
I'm going to flip through the composition books that I keep as notes and have kept notes. There's a lot of fun things in there and funny things and ideas and stuff that we could gab about. And never have. That's the point. Maybe never. I'll only talk about the ones I never. Going to go through those books during one of our shows. I'm just going to be talking about the stuff that's there, what's there, and that's it. And it'll take us back a bit because, you know, we'll have memories and stuff. It'll be wonderful. or it'll be a big piece of crap. But it's an idea, and I'm going to try to follow through on an idea for a change. So Craig Leaner is in Los Angeles, so it's going to be earlier. Not that it matters. Maybe it matters to him because he wouldn't want to be on later, and it doesn't matter to me because I could stay up all night, and I probably will anyway. Because that's the kind of life I lead right here in Canada. And it's what I'll do on Thursday nights until I don't do it anymore. Craig Leaner has a new book. And he's, I'm going to talk to him. So why would I talk to you about him? We'll learn more about him when we get him. Let's try to get him now. But we have, you know what we have? Skype, some bitch. Okay, I'm going to call him. What do I do? Okay, I hit that. Oh God, the new Skype. The new Skype, it's connecting to Craig Leaner. Dun, 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 dun. Craig isn't online, ladies and gentlemen. So we're just going to have to wait. Type a message here. Hey. It is time for radio. Maybe he'll call back. Of course he'll call back. He wants to be on. I always, and I've told you this before, whenever something is scheduled and something goes wrong, like the person isn't there or something like that, I always immediately imagine the worst. That's a horrible thing, except I know I do it, so I'm involved in the thought process, and I realize it's just a bad habit that I have because it was given to me by my parents, which is not where all bad habits come from, that's for sure. But that particular thing happened. Okay, so Craig Leaner, who is he might be, well, you know what he might be doing? He might be so precise. And I called like 3 minutes early. He might be so precise that he's like, well, there's no time to go on yet. And that is a bad imitation of his voice. It's just a character I made. In the meantime, I want to say that you're welcome for the wonderful radio, for all the thanks I get. Selling books is a... I'm looking at something, and it's always been a problem. Oh, there it is, live. What is this live? What is this? Who's this? Something comes up. Oh, he's here. Well, where are you? Okay, let me call him again then. Okay, so I'm calling you. Well, here I am. I'm calling you. Okay, I'm calling. It says Craig isn't online. Okay, hold on here. It says you are not online. All right, let's go for that thing now. Maybe we could realize what... It's Skype. Believe me, I know it's Skype. It's not ringing here. Oh, wow. Let's see. Well, it says Craig Leaner. Okay. Let's see if he calls me. Maybe he could call me. Let's see if that works. What the heck is wrong with this junk? You need to accept my invitation. Oh, do I? Where is it? Oh, this Skype, I hate this. Where is that? Okay, let's go. What does this say? God, I hate Skype now. And I'm a big Google fan, you know, I told you that. But this is ridiculous. How do I get to, where is it? Oh man, that makes me sick. I hate, he's listening. He hates it too. Yeah, what do we do? Where do I go for this? Craig Leaner, let's see. Let's go here. Okay, now is that you?
Where do I go for this? Craig Leaner.
Are you there, Frank?
Yes, I'm here. And you're listening. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you doing?
Okay. Wow. Jeez. What do you think happened with this now?
The new Skype is kind of strange, and it's such a coincidence that we would be talking right now. You have no idea what I'm doing right now, do you?
I don't know why I would. If I did, I would call the police if I were you.
I'm filling out an application to join the PHHA, which for the uninitiated is the Pennsylvania Harness Horsemen's Association.
Are you really?
And I'm scrolling down here, and it says that I need a sponsor. And so, hat in hand, Frank, would you sponsor me?
Well, absolutely. They know me. They should know me there. They've kicked me out of enough meetings.
Okay, thanks. I'll go ahead and plug your name in later on after the show and file this application.
They do. They know me. Who's the president now? I don't know that guy. Wow. So you want to be a member of the Pennsylvania Harness Racing Association for what?
I try to get as close to harness racing as I can, primarily because I like talking to you.
Too bad we don't have cassettes or anything anymore. We put in one of those things. Well, how are you? We haven't talked in a while, but you know, we've both been busy writing, right?
We have been. I'm in Chatsworth, California. The sun is starting to set. And on the eve of a new book release.
I know Chatsworth. I know Chatsworth. I've been there.
In the northwest end of the San Fernando Valley.
Yes, I have. I knew somebody, a guy named Dennis, who I worked with. He used to be there. But what does that matter? So you've been up, that's where you live, right?
That's correct, yes.
And you tell people they might not have been here the other two times or what have you. You live up there and you work, tell them.
Well, I do some freelance writing, some freelance human resources consulting, and then I'm a novelist at the same time. So I try to keep busy doing a lot of different things.
And so do I. That's the life of a vagrant. Is that the word? A vagabond. What a vankin vagabond man am I. I don't know, it's from Hamlet. Anyway, so I knew you said you were going to write a sequel, and I don't know how much time passed, but it must have been a lot. All of a sudden, to me it was all of a sudden. I mean, you have a sequel to it's not about basketball.
Dagnabbit, yeah, I sat down and started to grind it out. It took me about maybe 6-7 months to write it, and it's been, I guess you call it post-production, or at least in the film industry you would, the editorial phase and design phase right now. The book is titled All Roads Lead to Lawrence, and it picks up exactly where the first one left off.
When you did the first one, did you model it that way? Or did you model it for a sequel?
You know, at the tail end of writing the first draft, I decided to leave a couple of doors ajar in the last chapter on the off chance that I might have the will and the ability to do this again.
Okay. Because, you know, I always thought I'd written a book and I got my agent and manager on one book. Okay, on one book. And I never intended on it being more than one book, and took a lot of time to research and do the heck what I did. Doing this one book piece of fiction. And yet when I got him, when I got involved with, he said like, well, you could do more books, can't you? I mean, with this, I mean, like this, not like this, but you know, characters and a series, you mean? And he said, yeah. And here I am. I just finished the fourth book in the series, but I never planned. What I'm trying to get at is that I think you could always make something a series, right? I mean, right? I mean, you don't have to write a book and end it. Unless, of course, you know. I mean, if James Bond died in Casino Royale, where would he have gone? But, right?
Yeah, as fiction writers, we get to live in our own imagination in our heads and make it up as we go. And so as long as you have the ability to think up a story and make it compelling enough, then sure, yeah, you could write a whole series of books.
What did you, so you'd had no problem making it into another entity, even though, I mean, not necessarily related. It wasn't dependent upon reading the first one. It's just another story with the characters.
Yeah, and I wrote it so that readers could read this one first and then double back and read the other one. I had to do some research on how to approach a sequel. You know, there's the aspect of giving enough information for new readers, but not overdoing it for people who already know the first story.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a balancing act, so I researched it, did the best I could. My editor on the East Coast, Judy Gidenstein, helped me out and helped me to kind of buff it up a little bit.
Where would you research that? Particular that process.
You know, Google's a powerful tool. This is not an ad for them, but if you just do a search for how to write a sequel, and you see dozens and dozens of articles people have written,
yeah.
And so I read a whole bunch of articles and embraced what worked and chucked the rest and came up with a game plan.
I just went at it, but that's okay. You know, I started the show, I played this, a little bit of this lecture that Stephen King was giving to people who wanted to be writers or who are writers. And I don't know, I'm very hesitant. The older I get, the more I write, the more I actually do things and accomplish them. I'm very hesitant at anybody or any, you know, instruction or another writer. You know, another writer is probably the worst person you could give a book to when you finish it is like, I have a friend who's a writer. I'm going to give him the book. You know, that doesn't work.
Yeah, that's a moment of terror right there. I read Stephen King's book on writing, a memoir of the craft, which was sort of part how to write. And the other part was like an autobiography of his life. And he and I don't see eye to eye, and that's fine. He's Stephen King and he's quite prolific, but he doesn't like to box himself in with outlines. He's more of a seat of his pants kind of guy. And if I did that, I'd still be writing.
Well, I'm a seat of your pants guy in a way. I never could do outlines. I used to get F's in school in English because, they would force you. They would say like, well, you gotta have an outline. And, I said, I don't know why you have to have an outline. If you can do the job and get it done. But some people are very, for some reason or another, very particular. I know that I read a review of about how unfair reviewers were to some of his work because of how he tells a story, and I thought that was good. But I can't read him. I can't read it. I can't get through any of his books.
Not for everybody, for sure. I mean, I don't read a lot of his stuff. I don't like to have the bejesus scared out of me. So that's one of the reasons.
Really? So books, I tell you, I never found books to do that to me. I mean, movies here and there when I was younger. Now nothing does it, but, that's something that people sit there and they would shiver. I mean, you'd be on a subway in New York on the way to work and you get scared with 1,000 people. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. Enough about him. He doesn't need more audience. Let's talk about.
I'd like to talk more about Jiggy Jaguar, frankly.
No. Let's get back to you, and catch everybody up with the book you wrote, which is your first book, and how you got into writing your first book and then into your second book. Let's catch some of these people up. We got some new people here, I'm sure. I don't mean new people like they were just born. I mean new people, as we always do. Tell them a little bit about Craig Lehner. That makes them go, hey, this guy wrote a book, I'd like to read it.
Well, and I'm sure you can relate to this, like everybody who writes in their life for whatever reason, corporate stuff or newsletters or just, you know, letters to family members, we always feel like we have a book in us. And I thought that for the longest time. And then it just felt like it was time to make good on that and throw down. And I read 8 different books and had to write one before I even started so I can understand the craft better. One of the best pieces of advice I got was to tell everybody you know that you're writing a book because you have nowhere to run at that point. You have to deliver it. And I thought that was really helpful in my case.
I used to tell people I wrote a book and they go, yeah, what was it? Oh, you didn't read it? Well, the hell with you. So you obviously went into it with a bit of anxiety, even though you said you could, you have a book in you. There were just too many people in my life who used to say that, who I knew, it's like, they would say that because they thought their lives were interesting or something. Because they tell you one story, right? And they go, oh, I could write a book. I got a book in me about this stuff. And they're never going to write the book. They can't write the book. They're not going to. They're not interested in writing the book. In other words, everybody seems to say that, and they do not have a book in them. The book that you wrote didn't have anything to do with you per se, though, but it did have to do with stuff you knew about.
Right, yeah. I played a lot of basketball as a kid, refereed, coached, even wrote about it as a sports writer for a local newspaper. Mm-hmm. But that game is one of the ways, probably the primary way that I view the world. You know, I study people through that game. And I thought I could reach young readers with that kind of approach. I'm on the board of directors of the Journalism Alumni Association over at California State University, Northridge, where I mentor young student journalists and help them become better at the craft. I'm fiercely protective of the rights of student journalists, and it's one of the ways, you know, by which I'm wired. And so this book was a way to reach a young reader and to try to teach some lessons and show that person, you know, a better way to do things.
Do you find, I think that, I don't know if it's young, I don't know journalists per se anymore that are new or what have you, but you know the new format, the digital world, and the fact that people write on the net there's been a lot of corrupting of the language. I know I'm very critical of it, as every week it's been going on for a long time ever since the show, which started on the net, because I think that I would hope that you're teaching people. What do you have, a textbook?
Well, the AP style guide is primarily what I use when I'm talking with people.
That's the one. That is it. That one is so good. I know there's a, what's his name, Skunk? What's the Elements of Style, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, Skunk and White, yes.
It's okay. But I found that the AP, Rippin, is that his name? Rippin? What's his name? I don't know what. I don't even know if
I happen to have it right here in my office. Graham Strunk and E.B. White, Elements of Style.
Yes, yeah. And then what's the AP one? Is it, his name Rippin or Ryan? What?
I'm not sure it's written by any one person. I think it's just a collection that Associated Press puts together of all their rules and regulations of writing. And that's the one I primarily lean on people to read. And it's an encyclopedia of cool stuff to know. And if you read that thing cover to cover, you are instantly smarter than the guy you're standing next to.
Oh, man, it is great, even if that's another version of it, I'm sure, because the one that I have goes back a few years. It is fascinating but I'm sure you're a good teacher because you've got that on your back now. I mean, you've got that to back you up now.
Yeah, and the Associated Press also publishes a companion work, which is called the Guide to Punctuation. And one of the things I encounter in working with young people is that nobody knows how to use a comma correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I make them sit down and read the chapter on commas over and over and over again until they understand. They're like roadmaps. You know, when you're writing to somebody, it tells them when to stop and pull over and, you know, how to approach a story. So it's so important. I think punctuation is key for the young writer to learn. They can always, you know, bail on it later, but at least have an understanding of how it is properly used at the beginning.
And I think people who have been in journalism, I made a very difficult change one time in my life, because I was just raised and then started making my living on creative writing. And then I moved into a journalism situation. And I found it a little different. I mean, realized right away, uh-oh, you know, this is different. And do you find that young people who want to be writers, who are into journalism, do you feel that they don't understand the difference between you know, reporting and writing creatively.
Yeah, it's prevalent.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that was a frustrating sound. Well,
most of the things that I read from young readers, sometimes I'll judge some sports writing competitions for an organization, the JC organization out here in California, and their sports writing reads like a homework assignment, like someone is standing over them with a ruler and making them write it.
Mm.
And there's nothing compelling about that. You're just trying to get through an assignment. It's the rare student who is passionate about what they're doing and really study how to do it properly and, you know, get three-quarter sources in the story, you know, have a nice lead that tells the reader, you know, okay, this is time to really get into this story. They're just hard to find.
You know, I was looking at some old newspapers and a documentary I was watching, and I love the old newspapers where, obviously, newspapers wanted as an audience people who didn't have the time or the care to read and didn't read well. So there would be like, you've seen these, it'd be like four or five headlines which pretty much told you the whole story, right?
Yeah.
I love that. I even though I would want to know the story, but it's like, and today, well, there aren't any, not a lot of papers anymore either. But I find too many journalists are, they're just not, you know, what happened to who, what, where, when, why, and then get on with, you know, give me the facts and then get on with it. You know, in other words, writing AP style, which is like, you know, important to non-important, you know, just backwards. And then, anyway, we don't have to give a class here, but I'm just always interested because I don't run into a lot of kids who want to write.
Yeah, you know, in my human resources life, I do a lot of recruiting, and if it's between two people who have basically the same qualifications, mm-hmm. and, you know, essentially a good personality and a good attitude, the one who's the better writer is going to get the job 10 times out of 10.
Mm.
Because that's a skill that you just, it's difficult to find, and you have someone like that in the company, right. A go-to person who can navigate and negotiate the written word, and it's invaluable.
I agree. And that's our show. No. Hey, here's another thing. Well, what do you want to say about the new book aside from, you know, where you can get it or when it's coming out or what have you? Dude, let's get that stuff out of the way and then we can talk about other things related to publishing. And go ahead.
Okay, well, I've been working on my elevator pitch. You know, then I don't like that term, but it's one of those things you have to deal
with. I don't know it. What is the elevator pitch? I don't know. What does that mean?
Well, you step into an elevator with a agent or a film producer. And so tell me about your book.
And oh, the pitch. Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
25th floor. So you've got 25 floors to get it all out.
Oh, yeah. I hate that. Go ahead.
So the sequel picks up exactly where the first one left off. My protagonist, my main character, Zeke Archer, he's getting ready to play in the Southern California regional finals at his college, which is at JC, Jefferson Community College. And that's where the book ends. So we pick it up exactly right there. So here's my elevator pitch. You know, a few months have passed since Zeke Archer saved basketball from extinction after the seventh dimension, which I refer to as the otherworldly entity that brought the game to Earth in 1891, tried to take it away for good. So Zeke is settling into his life after high school. He's leading his team, and he's running the point over at Jefferson Community College. And that is where, on his home court, the strange tale begins. Tragedy strikes, and of course, that always is the way, right, Frank?
Yeah.
Tragedy strikes close to Zeke's heart, and his world slowly begins to crumble around him. But when he received a mysterious message that could only have originated from another realm, Zeke begins a journey like no other, and he's flanked by his trusted friend, Lawrence. Lawrence is a math whiz who might have just discovered a top-secret interdimensional portal. Zeke crosses paths with a drop-kicking rugby aficionado, a sage and telepathic sea creature, and the possible inventor of basketball, all in the quest to find the true meaning of love, loss, and friendship on and off the court. That's it.
It's like we must tell people that there's science fiction involved in this, in case some of you people were wondering about dimensions and stuff. It's like Slam Dunk Gordon, this kid, right?
Yeah, I introduce an interdimensional energy being using a technique for writing for young adults called magical realism, where fantastical things are happening in the story, but they seem pretty normal to the kids in the story.
Mm. It's like the ghost who comes back and they go, only you could see me. Right? Those, is that magical phantasmagoricalism or whatever we just said?
Yeah. That would certainly qualify. Yeah. So that's the book in a nutshell. And Zeke Archer is, he's under a lot of pressure and a lot of things are happening to him. He's just trying to navigate, maintain his integrity, make good decisions, and, you know, get himself to the regional finals in the next season.
Could you see yourself writing Zeke?
Zeke.
Ooh, that was, I did you come back? I came back on myself there. Oh, you had something on loud, right?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm just, your volume's down pretty low right here.
Oh, I just heard myself rebound, my voice rebound. That's scary. Could you see yourself writing Zeke into adulthood? And I mean, could you see taking this character through a greater part of his life in fiction?
Well, I think I could do that. And my editor wants me to make this a trilogy and write a third book.
Oh, right. There goes, right. First, could you do a sequel? And could you do a trilogy? Could you do, what is four? A quadrant? So, a quadrility? What is it?
At that point, it's just a saga or a series, I think.
Okay.
But I really feel like I'm on this earth to write young adult books, you know, not really adult ones. And I have to tell you that adults do read my books.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially ones who are not related to me, and they tell me they can't put them down. So I think there's a bit of a crossover factor, too.
Everybody who's read my book said they could put it down.
Yeah,
any
well,
book I've read.
I've read your books, and I was picking them up and putting them down a lot. Good stuff. Moon Over Gorgon is...
Stream
of consciousness.
Oh, the... You know, it's really not stream of consciousness, but I'll accept that. If anybody enjoys it, they can label it however they want, right? You read the short stories. Didn't I give you a novella, or didn't I give you one of the?
No, I just got the one here, Moon Over Gorgon.
Oh, because you don't have digital.
Well, I do, but I prefer to read the hard copy. And you and I exchange hard copies of our books, and this is the one that...
Because I don't have hard copies of some other ones. Yeah, okay.
This thing's even autographed, too, which makes it a lot more valuable than before.
Well, thank you. I don't know what value that may have. You know, my first published book became popular in a cult way, and... There were very few. It was a low printing, a minimum. It wasn't a lot of billions of copies, and one day out of nowhere, it was like a couple of years after it went out of print. It was on eBay. Somebody bought it for like $200.
Oh my goodness!
Man, what kind of a nut job was that, huh?
Well, that's called the cult following, Frank.
Yeah.
And, one could argue that that's what you have.
And I would say that if you're going to try to make a living writing, you really want to listen to Stephen King, not me, because cult fans are limited. So you really wouldn't want to take Zeke all the way. And still,
into the adult world, well,
what do you want to
not.
Do? Well, you want to do something else, or you want to do a trilogy? Suppose you finish your trilogy, okay, that takes care of Zeke. How many years would there be between the beginning, it's not all about basketball, and then the third one, do you think, in the context of the story?
Probably a total of about maybe 2.5 years or so.
Oh, that's all. That's not much at all, is it?
Yeah, I mean, if you get too far into college, then you lose the young adult reader. So I've got to keep this kid in, at least as a sophomore at a JC. For the time being, the next one on deck after the trilogy, I've really given this a lot of thought. I want to write a young adult book on a cross country runner. I think that there's a lot to talk about with that sport. I spent some time covering it for a local newspaper. I have a lot of respect for those kids and the coaches. You know, they endure the kids endure so much pain, and they do it so they can run with their friends and be part of something bigger than themselves. I really think I can make a pretty good take at that.
I forgot when, before I asked you that question, I forgot that, yeah, we're talking about the young adult audience.
So they're, I guess they're not going to want to know about Zeke when he's signing up for Social Security, right?
That's unlikely.
I mean, you got some of Zeke, you know, you can, yeah, Zeke had a kid. Anyway, this is Cotolo Chronicles. We're here with Craig Lehner. I think I asked you before, but I don't remember. What kind of a name is that globally? Lehner. Does it come from something else, or is that the actual name?
Boy, you know, I had a relative who did a genealogy study and traced it back to the 1820s in Ukraine.
Ukraine. Lehner.
Yeah, and the name at the time was Lehner, spelled L-I-N-N-E-R.
Mm.
And somehow it must have got sanitized coming over the border at some point. So, yeah, we were a bunch of rabbis running around in the Ukraine in the 1820s.
Rabbis in the Ukraine. Hey, that's the title of a book. Why aren't you writing Rabbis in the Ukraine? That's the kind of title that people would, you just jump at. They would go like, really? You read Rabbis in the Ukraine?
I'm going to leave that title for you. I'm going to give it to you.
Gift it to me. No, I did a Ancestry.com thing, and it turns out that I am 20% Jack the Ripper.
Goodness.
So, yeah, it's pretty bad. It works for some audiences. Some audiences like it and others don't. You know, the thing is that I've been talking to my son who's, you know, I guess a professional writer. He gets paid to write various things, but, you know, he's still in college and on his way out. He's in harness racing too. You know, we're talking about references because every once in a while my son does stand up because he picked up some comedy. I wrote comedy for years. So, and we talk about, you know, he gives me jokes that he wrote and I'll tell him a joke. And, references are so, they're just so different. You can't. I mean, if I got a younger audience, I tell that joke and they're like, okay, what's he mean? Jack who? See a rapper? Did you say Jack the Rapper? You know? References are tough because younger people, do you find this? Because you're dealing with younger people all the time. For instance, let's even talk about basketball. When you're teaching, or when you're dealing with kids and you're coaching with kids, were they aware of the history of basketball and famous old basketball players or anything? Or did they just within the realm of their growing up hero basketball people or whatever?
You know, I think a lot of players, a lot of young players, got interested in the sport because of some of these old timers and contemporary players. So they're pretty savvy about who has played the game. They have access to a lot of footage on things like YouTube, so they can study up. So they're remarkably well educated into, you know, who the stars were in the past.
That's enlightening because this is exactly it. I've taught, not officially or what have you, but teach of these past on. I'm not passed on. I've mentored people who into comedy. Okay, and it's amazing to me, younger people, not iGens and Gen, not Gen X's or what, I don't know, whatever, younger than me. And, I'd say I don't understand why they don't, utilize this incredible wealth of, information that is right in their hands every day. It's like if you're into comedy and I make a reference to someone, they go, who's that? You know, or I had a kid on the show who's a comedian, okay? And he said he was inspired to do comedy by Adam Sandler. Now, that doesn't just mean the kid was young. That means the kid is so incredibly unequipped.
Well, best thing I can say about that is everyone's on their own evolutionary path.
All right, I'm going to write that down because I should have some compassion for these people. And I shouldn't yell at them all the time, right?
And he's at the front end of things, but there's hope.
I yell at people for this. I don't understand it. Because even when I was young, I always wanted to know. And I used to play in rock and roll bands, you know, back in the 60s. And I'd always want to know more about where these guys, you know, who did you like? How did you get that? Where did you get that? And I would,
it would be great pains when I was younger to research, right? Like, oh, that's a blues thing? Who are the blues guys, you know? And you'd have to go look them up or get old records or something. Today, it's so simple for anyone to equip their minds with the history of whatever topic they deal with, and they don't do it.
Yeah, you know, sometimes when I talk to young kids about who my favorite band is, which is the band 10 years after, a blues band out of...
We talked about that. Alvin Lee,
yeah,
right?
They look at me, yeah, Alvin Lee, they look like, at me like I'm from outer space. Like, who's that? And I tell them, listen, go rent Woodstock and, you know, scroll about halfway in and spend 11 minutes on the couch being electrified.
And do they come back? Anyone come back and say, hey, that's rad, man?
Hasn't happened yet, but I'm still okay. You know, I've got the shingle out and I'm hoping they'll come in.
Let's talk about the market. Because it's a very, it's an expanding market. And I guess it has different factions across the country, the teen market. In other words, are there more liberal teen books or the teen fiction, or does it serve a relatively, bordered type, teenage audience? Did I ask that correctly? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to grasp onto that question. It sounded like it might have been a good one.
We were getting there. Let me try it again. What are the moral boundaries of the boundaries of writing teenage fiction? Are they the same from culture to culture, at least in the United States? Because, you know, there's many different cultures here. And today, of course, what kids can see, what they can be exposed to, is a lot more liberal than it used to be.
Yeah, topics like race and violence.
Even language.
And language, of course, are dealt with a lot more, I think, than they used to be. The things that I write, there's not a lot of language going on there. There's sort of things get alluded to as far as sexuality is concerned. And I try to write things kind of race neutral and make it more about sort of friendships and basketball. It's kind of challenging. The cross-country book I'm thinking about writing will probably delve a little bit more into the race issue. But things are a little bit edgier, I think, than they used to be. Mm-hmm. Writers are pushing some boundaries, you know, like especially with race and gender.
Well, what I mean about the boundaries, though, are created because kids, the language of kids, and when we say kids, we're talking, you know, teens, it's different. It's more accepted in the fluency of, you know, curse word. I don't know how to put this. I mean, it's just different in terms of the what they say, how they say it. Or am I just talking in an urban situation? Because, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, and man, kids were filthy mouthed from the beginning, you know, and everybody got filthy mouth, but not in general. You wouldn't see that in stories about them in the books, you know, in books and everything. But today, there are, let's face it, there are TV shows and series and prestige TV and everything and cable there, that where kids, there's parents don't want kids to watch certain programs where kids are talking the way kids talk. You know what I'm saying? It's different today.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that music has had a big impact on how kids talk these days. They want to emulate the people they like to listen to musically, and then the language tends to evolve at that point. And it's not always pretty.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard anybody mention music as a an influence to... jargon.
You know, rap music especially. Kids want to emulate what people who rap musicians, you know, how they speak and the words that they use.
But it also has to do with the way the standards and practices have changed in the media in general, though.
right?
Yeah, they've certainly loosened up quite a bit. No question about that. And so the language embraces things as the envelope continues to get pushed.
There's a series that I absolutely love. I had to watch it twice, though, but forget about my viewing deficiencies. There's a show that started out in Israel, became very popular, and then it came onto Netflix not only because of, but, you know, money and connections and stuff. But there's a show called Euphoria. I don't know if you read about it or heard about it.
I'm making a note right now. I've not heard about it.
Euphoria is really beautiful. It's a beautiful piece about the struggles of kids in their age, of their age, and dealing with things like sex and drugs and identity. Without sex and drugs, I don't think people, it seems that kids don't find their identity. Fortunately, some of them don't find a life. But anyway, I really got hooked on this thing. And it's really disturbing, but it's great. I think it's great. And I can't mention anything related to stuff I've written because I'm still under NRA, court order, NDA, and non-disclosure. I'm still an NDA'd. I'm NDA'd about stuff I'm doing. I can't describe stuff. But I am interested in younger people in that respect, and have done a lot of research. And this thing came along, and it's shocking to me that this particular piece was translated. I think Barry Levinson's son did it, from a hit series in Israel. And when you see it, you'll go, really? It's like, because I didn't even think they were that liberal in Israel, but what do I know?
Is it subtitled or dubbed?
No. This is the version of the Israeli.
Oh, I see.
It's called Euphoria. And okay. They did it, and they redid it so that, you know, whatever. But anyway, it's it does not hold any punch. It doesn't pull any punches, if that's the phrase. Or it doesn't. It just goes all the way. And there's a young woman in it. Who's known as a singer, and she was a Mickey Mouse girl, Zendaya. Do you know about Zendaya? Have you heard of Zendaya?
I've heard of her.
Yeah. She's, so I immediately, had a new crush.
it doesn't take much, Frank.
Which I dare say, you know, I admit here. Started following her on Twitter and sending her lovely little poems. But the thing is, when I think of ways that the fiction, teenage fiction is, that's why I asked the question in the first place, which we've totally forgotten, right? No, I mean, like you said, you skirt around, flirt around things. Wouldn't those kids curse when they talk? I think there's a word, curse. I mean, they're kids and it's supposed to be this time and they're dealing with things in outer space. They don't ever stop. And just, they drop F-bombs and stuff. Who are these kids?
I'm sure they do. My editor said, if you put a lot of that in your book, certain librarians are not going to want to carry it in my library. So, you know, you make those decisions. You make your best shot, your best call, and then you move on. And that's what I did.
I've had those problems, trying to be realistic and, But, okay. That's what I meant about the market. Would that change? Could you possibly have a version that would go over great in in Chicago, but wouldn't work in Topeka, Kansas?
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah. You're listening to Cotolo Chronicles here. Craig Lehner is with us. We're not done yet, Craig, but tell them we didn't go. When is the book released? Is it ready? Where is it?
The book will be published on September 10th.
Wow.
So, I know not a lot of guys will go on the air with a book that's almost published, but, I like to take one for the team here. It'll be available additionally on Amazon, but then anywhere books are sold around the country. So September 10th is the release date. And, of course, my original one, This Was Never About Basketball, is up there on Amazon. It's been up there for about 2 years.
You have a Craig Lehner page there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have the author page and the books there and got some nice reviews. Moving some product, as I like to say. Selling quite a few books. It's a bit of a surprise. I didn't know what to expect when I hit the go button. But I've been very, very fortunate the book's been received really well by readers.
I guess fortune has something to do with it. Luck has a lot to do with everything. I always say that. And who knows who listens, but there's a lot of talented people out there. There's a lot of ways that they could, that are never heard from. Their work is never heard from or appreciated, but that's not where I'm wanting to go here. What I want to say is that will you go to the next book immediately?
Not immediately. I think that I need to spend some time promoting this one at book festivals and book signings. Probably go to Lawrence, Kansas again towards the end of this year. So there's a certain amount of energy involved in moving this thing along and, getting it to take root. And then at some point when the next story falls from the sky, hopefully I'm standing there with the catcher's mitt, and then I'll start writing at that point.
So you don't have the So when you get this one, I remember you talking about the first one and your father, the idea of something that had to do with your father?
Well, yeah, that was the second one. The first one, I got the idea over at one of the California missions in San Fernando at the Chapel of Ease. I was there for a funeral.
Yeah, that's right. There was something,
And I got this message that came from the sky into my head, and which was basically that the five words are taking the game away. And I said, gee, holy crap, I've got the storyline now. And I went home and outlined for about a week, and then on the eighth day, as it were, I wrote my first chapter.
That's a fascinating story. From your from the sky to your head. How come I don't just say from your head?
I don't know. So the new book, again, struggling with the story, trying to figure out where I'm going with it. And it was a Sunday morning, drove up to College of the Canyons, one of my bases of operation up here in the north end of Los Angeles, for the Sunday farmer's market. My wife usually goes with me. She was under the weather, so she stayed home. And so I'm coming back down the freeway with a sack full of vegetables, and there's my dad. He's laid to rest at a place called Eden Memorial Park, there in Mission Hills, north end of the San Fernando Valley. So I swerved out the freeway and drove over there, just decided to hang out a little bit, sat down next to his headstone, put my hand on it, and just started to have a conversation with him, sort of out loud and in my head. And the last thing I said to him was, listen, if you get any story ideas from the hereafter, it wouldn't be too much trouble, just send them my way. So got back on the freeway and was driving home, and I started to get this idea about how human consciousness might not be tethered to the human brain.
Mm.
And I'm thinking about this concept. Meanwhile, my wife calls me in the car while I'm driving, and she says, can you stop by the market to pick me up something? She needed something to try to feel better. So I kind of, groused about that, drove to the market, walked in, Super Bowl Sunday. Place was a complete zoo. So I ordered her drink from the juice bar, and I walked around with a handcart to collect some food items to kill some time until the thing was ready. Got in line, thinking about this concept, and I get in line to pay, and the girl checks in, scans all my stuff, and a lot of stuff in there is by weight, so it's pretty random. And she says to me, that'll be 1926. And I looked at her, and I think I might have turned white. That was the year my father was born. And it was like I got confirmation that the connection was made. And so I just went home and started to slam it. And next thing I knew, I had a first draft.
It's a good explanation. I mean, you could make that, certainly can make that connection, if that's what drove you to do it. What if it had been if it would have been like, that'll be 1872. Do you think you would have not had the, in other words, what would happen if it was a different number?
Well, I received the idea from somewhere, and it might have even been inside my own head. I'm not really sure where it came from. The 1926 part of it, which is sort of confirmation. I think without it, I still would have been okay. But boy, And I got home and told my wife, and she started to cry. You know,
Well, miracles happen every day. Like, I mean, the chance of that happening was actually much better than, I think that's why people, at least this is not my theory, this is mathematics, you know. People tend to think things are, you know, really crazy when they actually do have chances of happening that are not, you know, connected to anything but the chance of them happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, the odds probably were long that particular number was going to come up based on what I was buying, but yeah. It did, and so I ran with that. I saw the receipt on my desk here at home, you know, when I write, that receipt's right there in front of me, so I just keep it there as a reminder that things might actually be connected.
I think it's great poetically. I like those, you know, I like to think of those things that way. But at the same time, I say to myself, I wonder if I bought, but what I bought unconsciously so that it would equal that and it would rebound back at me. That's the way my brain decided to give me the idea.
I mean, that very well could have happened.
Yeah. Who knows?
That I was buying, I was purchasing by weight, so I had no idea, you know, what it was going to cost when I put it in my basket.
Yeah, it's great how you. I'm not criticizing you on this, but I think it's great how you just defended it. That's exactly. Those are the things we do, right? Because we want, you know, and that's the whole thing, you know. We want so much for it to be true that we lean towards it being true when you know, it's. Mathematically, there's a great story about a book. Anthony Hopkins, the actor, had a book when he was younger or what have you, and it had some writing in it or a song, or I don't know, it was a book he liked or whatever. And and without making this a gigantic story, years later, and he didn't have the book anymore. He wanted to get the book again, and he went, into a store or somebody was selling a book or the book. And said, I had a copy of that book. And this was like years later and in another, you know, country or whatever, you know. And he got to be paid for the book. He said, oh, geez, I finally got that book. I wanted to get that book. He couldn't get it. It was out of print or what have you. And he opened it up. And it turned out to be that book. It was the very book that he had bought. It had traveled through the world in other hands and wound up again in his hands, which is fascinating. But, you know, and you want to believe, oh man, I was meant to have this book. I was meant to have this, you know. Those kind of things, haunt me because they seem to, I know we're getting philosophical here, but we're writers. Okay, you people, it's Cthulhu Chronicles, you should expect this. I have to put them in line now and then. But,
explain it, but don't defend it, okay?
We want to believe, believe these kind of things, you know? But I'm always, I don't like people saying to me, things like, here's one here. Everything happens for a reason. Did people tell you that?
Hear that a lot?
Yeah. Well, it's like, what am I? What am I, a kid? Of course there's a reason everything happens, but that's not what they mean. I mean, they're like, you know, if I crossed the street and almost got hit by a car, I almost got hit by a car because what was the reason? Well, I walked across the street. There's always a reason for things happening. They don't mean that. They want to plant something in your head, right? They want to say, there's a reason for that, and what? It's good or bad? I don't know. What is the reason? What is that supposed to mean?
Well, maybe that there's a deeper meaning behind this life and everything happening around us.
And the people who tell you that don't know the deep meaning. You know what I'm saying? You always got to consider the source. Is that not correct?
That's correct. And I think those people are really winging it.
I'll tell you another. This really recoils into, it recoils in journalism to the stuff we were talking about with language, right? Because how about this one? I did an hour on this, and because it just drives me nuts. It is what it is. Do you ever say that to anyone? Please say no.
Yeah, I try to avoid that one for sure.
It is what it is.
I call that the Doris Day factor.
Oh, because of que sera?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, whatever will be, will be. But that, you know, in a sense, that's not, it is what it is. It's saying, look, to me, that, I used to hate, you know, I hate that, I did a whole show on hating that song. I wouldn't even talk about it during this day, but that's a whole nother show and a whole personal thing. My point is this. My point is this. Why this obvious stuff that, you know, it's just so obvious. But que sera, sera means, hey, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. It doesn't say whatever's going to happen is going to happen because there's reasons and things. You know, people add this meaning to this stuff, right?
Absolutely.
That's why I hate them.
You know, George Harrison had a song called What Is Life? You know, we're all trying to figure out what the heck's going on around us.
Yeah, well, you know, he got involved with people who, you know, he got involved with the wrong side of Eastern mythology, which is what, you know, is, but, anyway, Craig Lehner's with us here for a while. We got as long as we wanted to. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about this. Do you have, or have you been asked, what do you think about audiobooks? Now you've written a book. What do you think about audiobooks in general?
Well, I think they serve a really legitimate purpose. I actually have an audiobook from my first one. I was fortunate enough to have a really good friend who built a recording studio, and he wanted to be in the business of making audiobooks in addition to recording music. And he hired the actor, hired the engineer, and I directed it, and I have an audiobook, and I think it's kind of cool.
Maybe that's why I asked you, because maybe you said something about it. I've been just been thinking about it lately.
We might have talked about it last time. I think that they have a really good application. People are in the car, and they're trying to get through a long drive every day, a big commute, or truck drivers or something yeah. like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they serve a legitimate purpose, for sure.
I have a problem with them. First of all, did you consider doing it yourself?
No, not for a moment. I don't think I have the kind of voice for it. And also my protagonist is 17, 18 years old, and I couldn't pull that off.
Well, do you have to do characters? This is not like a radio play. I mean, it's just, you're just reading. Do they do that? I mean, do you suddenly change voices?
Yeah, the young voice actor I use, a guy named Josh Powers, he was 24 years old when he did it. He did 26 different voices.
Oh, wow, I didn't know they did that.
Well, yeah, not everybody does. He chose to do it. And the thing was, he's not a basketball fan. He's from Minnesota, and my main character is from L.A., and he never read the book. He just walked into the studio and started reading. And, boy, it got pretty interesting. We had to, you know, do some takes on some words that didn't come out right. But by and large, this kid did a fantastic job.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think I could ever read my own book straight, because I don't do that. I don't even write that way, you know? I can't imagine anyone doing that. But here's what I think. I think, always what I feel. It doesn't have anything to do with what I think. You know, poetry is meant to be said and spoken. It's not really meant to be read, in a sense, you know? Because it has sounds and rhythm, and, you know, poetry is meant to be said aloud and spoken and read by people. I don't know about prose. I don't know about that.
And there's definitely some controversy there.
The reading experience is not there, right? It's not.
Right. Yeah, it's a different kind of experience. You know, the aspect of writing to somebody, you know, where you're basically putting your thoughts on paper and they're looking at it in print, and you're able to communicate with them, and they can put the story together in their mind. It's just fascinating the way it works. And yeah, the audiobook it takes it in a different direction.
Sure. And it's not, no longer an intimate experience. Books are, whether they're digital or not. I mean, one person is your audience. It's a, intimate. I like to use that word. May I?
I would argue that you and I are probably the best people to read our own work, because we know where the inflection belongs and how to, you know, how to approach it, how to speak it like we wrote it. And that's the bummer about not being able to read your own book.
I don't know. I could, you know, I've been in radio and I've been in recording and talking, and I'm you know, so you could hear my, I don't write the way I speak. And yet, when I'm writing, there's always, you know, I'm always, my mind is always editing and what have you at the same time. It doesn't take me long to come up with a line that I'm happy about writing. But when I'm reading it, I'm thinking, well, here's another way of saying it, which, you know, I can't do a book and then say, you know, suddenly. So I don't know, but just something I thought I'd ask because you have an audiobook.
Yeah, it's a cool thing to have. That's the best thing I can say about it. You know, I'm not selling a lot of copies of it. That's my audience is not really listening to the books on tape. You know, they're reading the paperback.
Yeah.
But it's a good feather in the cap.
I bet you I wonder if there's an untapped market there. You brought that up when you said, you know, I mean, you gave me that idea when you were talking about truck drivers, you know. And not that there aren't truck drivers who are just, you know, typical, you know, template type guys, bears with, you know, that there are other type people. And we know there are because there's so many people are doing that now because it's money. I mean, older people, a lot of retired people are getting into that, into the trucking thing.
Hey, Frank, I bet you a lot of people on the road right now are listening to your show. It's quite possible.
Well, you know, way back we talked about the fact that, you know, are they ever going to have the internet on the radio? Can you get it on the radio? Or, you know, people would have to make CDs or something. And now their cars don't even have CDs anymore. I mean, they don't have CD players, new cars. Well,
don't even have AM radios. You have to get it off of an app on your,
right.
on your device.
It's all Bluetooth stuff and hooking it on phones in and players.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do they, I mean, they have satellite radio, but we're not on satellite radio, and yet we're, you know, when this show began, in the first year of this show, when there were no other shows like this, and there, you know, nobody thought to listen to live broadcasts on the internet. And we, were picked up by a, it was either Barcelona or Madrid, one of those places, a restaurant. And they didn't even, most of them didn't even speak English. But they picked up this show where this one guy, that guy being me, because we didn't even have guests in those days, was talking. And they left and enjoyed how I spoke. Even though they did not understand a word I was saying.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we wound up getting, a couple of years later, we wound up being popular in that way. I say we, but popular in that way, in Japan. A group of people who were in, we formed a Holo Chronicles fan club in Yokohama. They'd get together. They were high tech people though. They were into, you know, techs and this stuff and not techs. I mean, high tech, you know, digital crap and stuff because they're Japanese. And you know, the guy who'd you want to cheat off of in school? The Oriental guy next to you because he knew what was going on and he was good, great at math, great gamblers too. You know, they are great gamblers. Anyway. They had like one or two people who spoke a little bit English, and they would get together and have like a Japanese beer, and they would bring in the older people, and a guy would like translate. He'd put me on, and a guy would translate. I couldn't translate it all of it, and he certainly couldn't keep up with me because I can't keep up with myself. And they would just sit there drinking, getting drunk, and laugh, and 99% did not know what I was saying. So that's very strange. It says something about the dynamics of not being a broadcasting regular because they can hear those guys anywhere.
Well, you're a crossover artist, and of course, Japanese culture is a lot different than ours. So none of that surprises me.
Good. Yeah. The Spanish ones are a little surprising. That restaurant. But then again, for all I know, they were all hopped up on whatever it is those Spanish people take. My name is Frank Cotolo, a man whose name adorns the title of the show. And we're here for as long as Craig wants to talk, which is at least another 20 minutes, because we are free to do what we want. And I once again want to say to everybody out there, you're welcome for the wonderful radio. It's the only reason I do it, because it's wonderful, you know it's wonderful, and you do it. And where the hell else are you going to go? A lot more guests coming up in weeks to come. And hopefully, I've not been on regularly on Thursdays because of the heat and some problems. The weather has been terrible. And even as we speak right now, live, we're hoping, I haven't heard anything about the huge hurricane hitting Florida. And I don't know. I'll find out later. I have friends down there. But there's a huge hurricane on its way to Florida. And most of Florida is under siege, or supposed to be. So we wish them the best. Craig, what are you doing these days? Or what else do you have to say about anything? Writing? Writers? You? Me? It? California? You don't have like a street full of homeless people on your block, do you?
Not on the block. We do have homeless folks, certainly here in Chatsworth and in the San Fernando Valley, and it's heartbreaking. And I actually deal with the homeless situation in L.A. in the sequel, too.
It's, I remember when it started, San Diego got very, very bad. How did it move up the coast so much? They just generate, wind up in the cities because that's where the most places they could go. I'm going to have somebody on who I know, a dancer in L.A., and she has a lot to say about how it's the problems they're having in inner city Los Angeles with cleanliness and stuff based on the volume.
Yeah, there's something like 55 or 60,000 people on the street here in L.A., and especially in downtown. You drive down the streets and you just see tents, like blocks and blocks of people in tents. And it's horrific and it's heartbreaking. And I wonder what our city officials are doing, you know, when they meet and to move money around and try to solve this thing.
How the heck did how many years is it? This is relatively recent, isn't it?
Well, I think it's been building, you know, over the last couple of decades, but relatively recent, yeah.
I remember going downtown or going to Chinatown for dinner. We always go to Chinatown in L.A. for dinner, and nothing like that. I mean, here and there you see a homeless person. I remember in New York, there's this fascinating documentary. It was on Prime Video, and it still is on Prime Video. I was watching called New York. You're a teacher. Let me tell you this little bit of annoyance I have. And I'm watching this. I grew up in Brooklyn, and I know a decent amount about Brooklyn. I thought I knew a decent amount about New York City and the history. And as I'm watching this, I'm just appalled at what they didn't tell us in history growing up in New York about New York. And its relationship to the rest of the country during its, you know, growth periods, or from the time that the 1600s when it was founded as a place where people could live. I'm just shocked at the things I'm learning now. It's too late to learn this stuff now. You mean to tell me they didn't know this stuff back then? Does that bother? Do you see things like that? You're a teacher. How has teaching changed since I was being taught? I mean, what? What's that all about?
Well, there's a lot more people in the classroom with cell phones than there used to be. And I think that's one of the big problems, just getting kids to pay attention.
Well, what about back then? There are things they didn't want to tell us. Or they lied about things, too. That's appalling.
Yeah. I don't know how much politics is involved in selecting what goes into a history book in history of New York, but I imagine that that plays a role in some of the reasons why you didn't learn things until later in life.
I think everyone growing up in my era learned had a very watered down, not just about New York, but, you know, world history, American history was different, was watered down. World history was watered down. It was all a bunch of crock. of stuff. I can say anything I want, but I don't like to do that on internet radio. I think it ruins, you know, but if you're going to drop an F-bomb, if you always drop F-bombs, then F-bombs lose their potency, right?
Well, that is true.
Yeah. So I don't do it, but I mean, I hate the word that people use for feces. I don't like that word.
Yeah. Tell you what, how about a palate cleanser right now? I want to swing this back to Jiggy Jaguar for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
I went to Lawrence, Kansas in January.
That's right.
To promote the book, just some internet radio hangout.
Wait, let me introduce it. Wait a second. You want to throw it back? Let me do what we should do. Speaking of crap, let's talk about Jiggy Jaguar again. Go ahead. Sorry, but
cleansing the palate here. So, with my I have a point man in Lawrence named Steve Herzog. I stay with him when I'm there, and he's helping me out with my book in that city, which is where the story takes place, right, largely. And so, we got in the car and we drove 2 hours to the northwest, and I did the Jiggy Jaguar show in studio.
He said, by the way, that he wants you back.
Oh, really? I don't think you can make that claim, can you?
What?
That you've done the show in his studio there, in his compound in Hutchinson, Kansas.
I've never been there, no.
Yeah, he even vacuumed the rug for me before I came over. And we had a ball. We talked for about an hour in his compound, as I call it. And he's quite a character, and he's a good dude.
He is. He's a.
I wanted to mention that I thought I had one up on you because I've actually been in the compound, and I figured you probably hadn't done that.
No, I'm going to be on his show this Tuesday, along with a guy who writes books about autism, and I'm, for the life of me, I think I know the guy. Of the guy, but he just out of nowhere, Jiggy goes, "Oh, well, how about you be on Tuesday with Dan, whatever his name?" And I'm, why would somebody want me on a show with a guy who's writes books either about or for autistic people?
What? I think you're about to find out, Frank.
Yeah.
Hopefully not the hard way.
There's no hard way anymore. I don't know what you could show me that I haven't seen. I've seen it all. Why I used... Anyway. Okay,
yeah,
listen,
I'm proud to say that one of my book's main characters, Lawrence Tuckerman, is a young kid with autism, and he has a lot of special powers. I really try to shine a very positive light on what's happening with people who are on the spectrum.
When you write a character like that, how do you feel about writing a character like that? What kind of research do you do? Do you talk to autistic kids?
I talk to the parents of autistic kids to get a feel for what it's like to be around them.
Mm-hmm.
I have talked with kids with autism as well. So I get a sense of, you know, some of their quirks and how they think. And picking up a book and doing some studying as well. I try to hit it from like three different points. Parents who have kids who are on the spectrum, they're a wealth of information about how to approach describing those kids.
But you did talk to kids with autism.
I did, yeah. Boy, you know, it's sad,
right,
to see kids like that who struggle, you know, with integrating into society.
How did you deal with creating a character? How did you feel that you translated? I know you just said, you know, you tried to be compassionate, but I mean, how did you deal with that?
The whole time I was doing it, I felt like I was invading a space that I didn't belong in.
Really?
It was a bit of a struggle. So I just threw it down the best that I could and hoped that it was right. And the feedback I've gotten has been really positive. Like, people who have kids on the spectrum tell me that, yeah, you got that thing right. You nailed it. This kid, that I've created, he's a math whiz. He's really good with maps. Got an interesting sense of humor. Sometimes he'll slap somebody, and it's a way to test them to see if the friendship will endure, beyond the slap.
That's good. That's a piece of character. Yeah, that's a good piece. That's a good piece.
He's testing his friends sometimes when he whacks them, and if they keep coming around, then they're a loyal friend.
when you're dealing with people who are just, who are, I'm going to say regular, but I mean, are on a, you know, a normal frequency, not that anybody is really on a normal frequency, but you know what I mean, that isn't stricken with something like autism or any kind of mental challenge. It's, a lot of things, you don't have to explain a lot of things other than what, you know, the character says. You've learned about the character. But when it comes to, specialties, let's call them specialties, I don't know how people, writers would not. Oh, hello. You there?
I'm here, Frank.
I'm going to get some weird feedback. I don't know how writers deal with that if they don't do some, you know, method acting. I read a great article about that too, about how many authors through the years were dealing with, you know, I don't write stuff, and they went into a community, or they did what method actors do later on when the Stanislavski method came out. And so I didn't realize that some of these writers who wrote books didn't know any, you know, much about this particular topic or that, or seafaring or sailors or whatever, went into the community. Because I relied on things I knew in places I'd been and researched other stuff, but only in the last couple of years that I've been writing the series, I immersed myself because I wanted to be authentic. I don't know how some people do it. Maybe they don't sell. And then when you're, because when you're doing it, when you're doing real fiction, and obviously you have the luxury, and, Stephen King would have the luxury of having that magical, you know, when you're dealing with stuff. When you're dealing with stuff that no one could tell you is wrong, because it's all part of, you know, just fiction, which is good and everything, it doesn't matter. But when you're dealing with something like an autistic child, I don't understand how anybody would sit down and say, well, the kid's autistic, so I'll just write him as I know autistic. Because I don't know how you do that and come off authentic.
You know, I tried to research enough to build what I thought was an authentic framework around the character. And then I just let my imagination take over and try to, maybe get inside the kid's head and try to figure out what he would do next.
Yeah. Cause that's it. But if you just said, okay, Frank, why don't you write this book? And why don't you write this character? Imagine if an editor said, okay, this is good, but you know, it needs an autistic guy, right? About in this, that, you know, one of the dynamic characters should be autistic. I was like, you know, well, what do you think I'm not going to just go into the book now and create this character. What do you mean, autistic? That's like also saying, you have to be very careful in terms of, your nationalism. I mean, who you are. If you're writing a person who's another race, right? You can't be like, Sax Rohmer. Now, I wonder if Sax Rohmer knew Chinese people so well that when he did Fu Manchu, what is this? Fu Manchu. Back in those days, I don't think you had to do that. I think you could really, the image of the character was based on so many cliches and things.
Like, yeah, things have evolved a lot since then. You know, I met with a young adult librarian when I was putting the first book together. Who was very helpful. And I asked her, one of the things I asked her was, what are kids looking for? What are audiences looking for? And without hesitation, she told me underrepresented characters. And so when I got home, wife, Andrea, who's very gifted at encouraging me and helping me, she said, why don't you write about an autistic kid? And so in that moment, Lawrence Sherman Tuckerman was born.
That must be great, though, to have somebody who's that helpful or that.
Yeah, but I'm sure there's a better, more stronger word for it.
That was a horrible way to put it, right? No. Yeah, the maid is helpful, Frank, but your wife. I mean, you know what I meant.
Someone who has, who loves unconditionally and has your best interest at heart, that kind of thing.
people who have read my stuff, I talk with them because we have drinks or whatever. We go out or here and there. And when we're having a conversation, they know I've been writing or what have you. I'm sitting there and I'm talking and I do things like that. And, you know, they always say the same thing. They went like, yeah, you all day you work. You've got such a great vocabulary. You're working. You're a writer and you say helpful, you know, they attack me on it. And I always tell them, you know, I finally found a way to get back at that thing. I go like, well, I used those words today.
I'm going to give you a pass on that one, Frank.
Why? Oh, you know, with the helpful or the idea of what I just said?
No, just the fact that you came up with a word that you could have improved upon.
Yeah. Okay, I could have. But then again, would they sit here for 2 hours and talk at all?
No. Certainly they wouldn't do that.
So, what do you know? You should come back another time and, like, the second time. You know, we talked about some other things in publishing and stuff. And you know what I'd like to hear from you? I'd like to hear some, let me find the word now, okay? I want to hear some, I'm going to hear about some things you really don't like and some things that now that you've gotten into writing as a writer, some things you don't like about maybe other, now that you're writing, you have to, when you're reading, know that you're a writer and that person's a writer. Now, before, you know, when you're just a reader, you're a reader. And, but when you're a writer and you read other writings, you must have, did you go back and read stuff maybe enough? You did. You went and got some books I told you about, remember?
Yeah. Let's see. I have them right here too. Ada, Nabokov book.
Yeah.
I think you almost didn't remember suggesting that book.
I almost didn't. I didn't remember it. Yeah, it's a tough one.
Much of my life I'll never get back. Also, W. Somerset Maugham, The Summing Up.
Did you get The Summing Up?
Yeah. And I actually highlighted something here to read to you.
Okay.
I write this book to disembarrass my soul of certain notions that have hovered about in it too long for my comfort. And that really sums up the book. I thought it was a valuable thing to read while I was working on my own book.
Yeah.
Thanks for the recommendation, Frank.
You are quite welcome. I recommend, that's one of the books. I don't recommend a lot of books, but when a creative, especially creative people, because that's so, it's the distinctive definitions and elements of being an artist. And the thing I love about Somerset Maugham was, you know, he wasn't like, I was a kid on the street and we ate from the curb. I mean, he had a pretty good life, you know? I think he even had a pony, didn't he, when he was a kid or something? And so for someone like that, someone who is, immediately entitled and privileged, to be able to write the things he did and understand regular people, that's fascinating. Have you ever read any of his books?
I have not. This was the first one.
Well, you need to read. I'll do another recommendation. It's a book.
I have a pen out right now. Go ahead.
And you must know The Razor's Edge.
Okay.
The Razor's Edge is I don't know what to say about it. It will tell you everything about it. And now that you know Somerset, because I didn't learn about him till after that. And of course, there's another one. The two of Human Bondage. Did you ever see the movie? These movies?
Quite a while ago, but yes. Yeah.
Of Human Bondage is also those two books, but The Razor's Edge. And let me tell you that there are two movie versions of The Razor's Edge. So I'm going to also recommend both of them. And one of them, which every critic in the world and every person who ever lived and saw it hated. And that is a version that where the main character, Larry, in the book, is played by
Bill Murray. Yep.
And I'll tell you, I'm not a big Bill Murray fan per se, but he certainly found Larry. I can't believe that people, well, cause they, you know, he's also cursed because he's Bill Murray and he did it. And people like Bill Murray wouldn't give up the fact that he was Bill Murray, where he was playing Larry. I thought he did a great job. I thought he did a great job in that. It's a good version. It has, you know, it's, but the original version suffers only from the time, and has probably my favorite actor of all time in it, Tyrone Power. That's 48 or 47 or what have you. So those two are worth seeing, but after you read it, because there's, you know, there's really no comparison to that.
I remember watching that movie and coming out of the theater thinking, what just happened? You know, I wasn't really sure what just happened.
The Bill Murray?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was a different kind of a movie experience than I was used to having.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Just a brilliant piece. And, you know, you read, pieces like that that I've read in my life, certain things I've read in my life, and I say, even music, I hear certain things, I've been in music for a while, or when I hear something that is just superlative, or read something, anything, and there are not a lot of them, but they fit into that, you know, I think there's the perfect word, superlative pieces, I love them, and I know I can learn from them, but I'm like so disappointed. Because I'm like, that, you know, why didn't I do that? I'm never going to attain these things that are like just the utter best. And then, you know, you just have to live with whoever the heck you whatever you do. But, and that's okay. And I live with it. But I know there are things that I can't touch. I feel like I'm not allowed, even as a writer. It's like, don't ever mention anything I've written and say the razor's edge in the same sentence. Don't even mention razors or edging or anything.
Yeah, you're too modest, Frank.
I don't know. but in any event, and certainly in this event. So, let's do the regular, credits now, and then, we can get out of here and bring you back to, even though it's early for you. What else you can do tonight? Just tell us. Tell everybody what you can do tonight now. You're in LA.
I'm going to open up a beer and have some dinner, I think.
Ah, dinner time. Dinner at the Leaners.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. Listen, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my website. My book producer, Marco Pavia, suggested I do that.
Yeah, do that.
This was never about basketball.com.
This, in case you guys didn't get that, that's one word, although it's many words. This was never about basketball.com.
Yeah, that'll lead into all the different directions you need to go in, including news of the new book. So, thanks for having me on the show, Frank. I really appreciate you doing that. You're a very kind gentleman.
Well, thank you very much. It's more than most people say about me, and I appreciate it. I want you to know that. We'll be talking about you here and there, because I always mention things and people who've had on. I'll tell them to go buy the book. Hopefully you'll have some good response from being on here. And you remember, you know, you can tell anybody this show appears again on juicedtalk.com in a couple of days or what have you, and then people can listen there, download it, it's free, listen on there or download it or what have you. So tell all, you could use that at no cost, of course, to help promote it and you all you want.
I will be posting that link to my website, and yes. Might even hit it on the Twitter as well.
Sounds good. Thank you, Craig. Stay well. Say hello to the missus. I don't know her, but she sounds like I should. But then again, yeah. Why would she want to know me?
All right. Thanks a lot, Frank. I have homework to do that you've given me. I'm on it, and I look forward to talking with you soon.
Go get him. We will talk. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. There goes Craig Leaner, leaving Skype. There's a fan still going. That's it, right? I mean, what are we going to do? We're gonna say, that's that. It's what we should do. Why pad it? My name is Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adjoins the title of the show. It was Cotolo Chronicles. Craig Leaner was just on. And we're going to have other guests coming up. Well, hopefully we'll be here next week. Maybe we'll do the Legends show, or maybe we'll have somebody on and do both. Who knows, whatever it is. The Artist D coming up later, and other people. Jiggy Jaguar, if you're listening live, or you hear this before the 3rd of September, I'll be on the Jiggy Jaguar show. That's JiggyJaguar.com. And it's not Jaguar. I mean, it's pronounced Jaguar, but it's Jaguar. JiggyJaguar.com. And we're going to try to get Mary Parr and the rest of them par for the course. Oh, that's it. Yeah. Bruce Goldberg, too. I'll work on it. I mean, you know, work too hard on it, but I'll get it. Good night, Mrs. Erstwhile, wherever you may be located. Thank you all for listening and all that stuff. And you are welcome for the wonderful radio. I'll leave you now. I got nothing more to say.